Happy day. I'm Liza, your healing mentor. I used to say, all I need in life is for my kids to be happy and healthy. The problem was they weren't happy and they weren't healthy. Both my kids had anxiety, depression, and even Lyme disease. Then one day my daughter told her therapist, what would make me happy is if my mom was happy. So I went on a journey to find my own personal happiness. When I finally became happy, my own kids accelerated in their own healing journey. Now I share my stories, my mindset, and other inspirational healers with you. Let's heal one story at a time. Happy day. Welcome to Very Happy Stories. Friends, I'm a little bit speechless right now. I've not found myself in this situation, but I just had the most amazing interview with the directors of The Quiet Epidemic. If you haven't heard of this film, which is probably rare if you follow me, it is on fire. It opposes itself as a film about chronic Lyme disease and answering all the questions of why is it so controversial? What is it? What is the history of chronic Lyme? But this film is so much more than that. Today, I speak with Lindsay Keys and Winslow Crane Murdoch, the co-directors of this film. This is really not just a film about Lyme. This is a film that everybody should see. It's really a testament to the human spirit. This is a film that is about perseverance and hope. It's a love story. It has adversity. It is going to inspire you in so many ways. And it's really the team, including the co-directors, that bring it to life. And they are so inspiring and they live with such passion and purpose. And I think that is the secret sauce of this film, The Quiet Epidemic, and all the people involved. We all have to watch this film. I've seen it. I'm going to watch it again, but I can't wait for you to meet Lindsay and Winslow. This is their very happy story. Happy day. I am so honored and excited to have Lindsay Keys and Winslow Crane Murdoch on Very Happy Stories to talk about The Quiet Epidemic. Welcome, Lindsay. Welcome, Winslow.
Hey.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. And I watched the film over the weekend when you had the sneak peek. And I think I went through half a box of Kleenex. It just really, really hit home. It was such a healing process for me to even watch. I mean, how powerful. Like I felt like grief had come off of me. It's really so impactful. And so I can't wait to dive in to our podcast, but the movie even starts before the movie with you two, because you both have had your own Lyme journey separately. And the story behind it is the story all its own. So could you kind of share just a little bit about how you guys even met?
Yeah, it's a popular question. And we understand because it was definitely a serendipitous encounter that came out of really unfortunate circumstances, right? So after many years of mysterious symptoms, I won't even go into them, but they were pretty horrific, physical, psychological, mental symptoms that were just excruciating. I ended up having to move back home with my mom. And it was my mom who actually helped me realize that it was Lyme I was dealing with. I had no clue. I thought that I was cured from a previous infection. And she had received her own diagnosis after many years. And she kept telling me, Lindsay, it's Lyme. You need to get this Lyme test. And I actually didn't believe her.
You were a skeptic?
I was totally skeptical. Yeah. I thought, wow, my mom thinks that everyone has Lyme and now I'm that person, right? I just thought, oh, I guess she doesn't want to be alone in her Lyme diagnosis. So she's trying to pull me into it now. And I've apologized to her profusely. She does not hold it against me, which I think you as a mom would probably understand. I think
totally.
Moms are just, yeah, it's just the capacity for forgiveness that parents have. I don't understand that, but. So I ended up moving back home with her and she encouraged me to go see a Lyme doctor. And I was so desperate at that point that I would have done anything that she told me to do. So So I went to this Lyme specialist that didn't accept insurance, and I just had no idea how I was going to walk down the path that I had just seen her walk down. You know, she ended up having to declare bankruptcy.
Wow. I
was so scared of what was going to happen. If I like, how was I going to support myself? And, you know, and without financial support from my family, it was completely terrifying. And then at my first appointment, the nurse practitioner asked me a really good question. She said, how are you going to get through this? Do you have a passion? We find that people at the clinic who have a passion tend to have better outcomes. So I told her that I was going to make a documentary about Lyme, and I'd been trying to find someone to make a film with about Lyme for quite a while. And all of my friends who were filmmakers were like, oh yeah, let us know how we can help. But none of them.
But we don't want to take on that topic. on the topic, we'll help you.
Good. Go for it. We believe in you. And I'm like, oh my God. But in that moment, it was just it wasn't a choice. And so I told her I was going to do it. And she looked really excited. And she said, we have another patient here who's your age, and he's a filmmaker with Lyme. Do you want me to connect the two of you?
Love that.
So I wrote a note, and she gave it to Winslow the very next day. He came in for an appointment the very next day.
Wow. Wow. So you get this note, Winslow, and where were you in your journey? Were you at the beginning, like Lindsay? I mean, as far as like a diagnosis, or had you been in treatment for a while?
Yeah. At that point, I think I had been in treatment for a number of months. That was probably in the fall of 2015. And I had started seeing that specific doctor in the spring of 2015. And before that, you know, I had been bitten by two ticks in 2013 after college, and had all of the, you know, the similar story of the summer flu and the diagnosis that was missed and a test that was negative and all of this cascade of symptoms that was sort of creeped up on me over the year in between the bite and when I finally started feeling really, really sick, and passed around the medical system for a very long time until I ended up at that doctor's office. And so at that point I had been on antibiotics for a while, and that was actually one of my last appointments, was one of Lindsay's first. And so we overlapped by just a little bit there in terms of who we were seeing. So very serendipitous in the fact that it worked out. First time getting a note at my doctor's office from a filmmaker. So that was a first. But I had been thinking about it already. And I think that, you know, I remember at the first doctor appointment that I had there, the woman who diagnosed me handed me a worksheet that said, here's why Lyme disease is so controversial. And it was such a weird world as a patient to step into, to be into that space and you know, and to have had no answers from after getting passed around for so many months from specialist to specialist to specialist. You know, I think as Lyme patients, you're left choosing what path to walk and left choosing who to trust. And so it's just so deeply disorienting. And Lindsay and I knew right away that it was such a strange thing that there needed to be better explanations for. And I think also as a patient, it gets so exhausting to constantly have to explain yourself to the people in your life that are asking why you're doing what you're doing and what you're going through. And so for us, it was a way, okay, how can we like take this experience and boil it down to something that is accessible for people so that they can watch an hour and 40 minute film and they can be like, okay, we get it. Instead of us and expend all of this energy constantly explaining it to every person that we meet. And so we wanted it to be a tool in that way. And we wanted it to be the start of a conversation. I think Lyme disease is so complicated that there was no way to fit everything into a feature length film, but we could at least start it and we could start that conversation so that now we can go out into the world and have more nuanced conversations about all the various aspects of it. But I think just getting our foot in the door and getting something out there that can be accessed by people who aren't sick, we've already seen the ways in which that's starting to affect people and is allowing people to finally understand what the patient experience is like.
Yes. And you kind of just answered the question that I wanted to ask you guys was, why did you make the movie? And it sounds like from your perspective, Winslow, this really had an impression on you, that you get this writing that says this is why Lyme is so controversial. And it's like, I know we all kind of enter this world and we're like, this is a thing. Like, this controversy, like, and why is it so controversial? And why is it not paid for by insurance? And what? And there's like so many whys. And so was your calling, I mean, for each of you to make the movie to answer those whys? Or I know you said like start the conversation, but like there's more there too. What was the drive to make the movie?
There are still a lot of questions around why. So I just want to start there. It's like in the beginning, I think we thought we were going to just figure this out. And it's so complicated that even after 8 years, it's hard to exactly explain, you know, why. But we wanted to give it our best shot and take our investigation and our research as far as we could in the time that we had. So I think, yeah, I mean, we wanted to understand why in this modern age where we can do so many things in medicine, you couldn't detect a bacterial infection. It seems so basic. And I think that that's why it's so hard to believe when you're on the outside of this. You're like, well, it's a bacteria. So don't you just take a blood test and pick it up? I mean, and at this point, considering Lyme was discovered almost 50 years ago, you would think that we would be able to do that. You know, and the fact that we couldn't get diagnosed, that we were misdiagnosed and undiagnosed for so long, was upsetting. You know, I think in the beginning, I'll speak for myself, like I was pretty pissed off, especially because my mom had almost died. And I, you know, never mind my own health, just watching what she went through, I was like, how is this okay? Who is driving this? Like, who's going to step in and fix this? You know, right? It's really, really frustrating. And so I think for us, it was like, rather than just sitting back and dwelling in that anger and frustration and everything else that comes up when you get really sick with Lyme, you know, just to kind of like entertaining the thought that like, maybe you're like not going to live as long as you would like. And, you know, it's a hard thing to face. And so for us, I think it became a really great vessel for us to channel all of that into something that was positive. You know, it's like what the nurse asked, like, do you have a passion? Do you have a purpose? People have better outcomes, right?
Right. Well, and the reason I ask is for me, it answered so many whys. Like the way you two did this movie, it's like, you don't understand. You just need to watch this movie. You know, to your relatives, to your other doctors, to your therapist, just watch this movie. You guys just do an amazing job of storytelling, and the people, like the families you have on, and the doctors and the researchers, and people within the medical system. I mean, you took the lens from so many different areas, different perspectives, I should say. And the whys are answered of like why it's so controversial, but it's so complicated. Like that I can't be like, here's the why, and then tell you. You got to watch the movie and see these different perspectives and how the story unfolds, even to the testing. I never knew. I think it was Dr. Horowitz or someone was explaining. And then they took out these two markers for a vaccine, and which was a disaster. And we're still kind of stuck with this. And you're like, oh my God. What a disaster. Who's in charge of this? Right. And so you realize it's a machine. It's a big machine, but you do understand so, so much more. So thank you. Like, I don't know how do you do that? Like, how do you put together this dance or this puzzle piece, I should say? Like, how did it all even flow?
First of all, thank you. It's really nice to hear that. I mean, that was our goal going in. I mean, that was literally the goal, is we wanted to create something that people could just say, hey, watch the movie and you'll get it. And so to hear you articulate that is really, really nice. You know, I think it starts by defining what your goals are. And I think that hearing you say that, it sort of reminded me that back when this was all happening, there's so much stigma around being a Lyme disease patient. And there's been so much conversation about how Lyme disease patients are crazy and how Lyme disease patients act in a certain way. And, you know, I did find that even the media that I was consuming around Lyme was sort of tinged within the spectrum of that conversation, to the point where I didn't feel fully comfortable sharing with folks a lot of what was out there, because I think, as Lindsay said, it's of course we were angry. It's right to be angry. We have reasons to be angry. But I think when you're trying to approach a group of people who haven't had the experience, anger is a really hard emotion to access if you don't understand the experience that other people have gone through. And so that was the start for us is, okay, well, given what's out there, how do we make something that someone who can't meet us in that anger could still come in and watch this film and meet us with the information? And so I think that choosing the people that we chose, that was such a careful dance of how do we find people who know that they're on the right side of this, but who are speaking about it in such a way that allows other people in. And so first there was Julia and Enrico, who of course are angry and of course gone through such difficult things, but they also hold so much grace in the way in which they move through the world. And there's the way in which they show up for each other is just so deeply beautiful.
Such a beautiful relationship.
Right. That it's hard to not sort of connect with that. And then there's Neil, who is this scientist who has literally a line in the film where he says, people ask me all the time, are you angry? And of course, Neil held anger towards what he went through, but he also saw the gifts that it had given him, the lessons that it had taught him. And he felt very grateful and lucky to be where he was in many ways and to be using his experience to help others. And then, you know, from there, it was just choosing the right experts who could speak to it in a way that was very measured, that was very matter of fact, and that just laid the things out. And I think that, you know, we've had other people respond that the film makes them angry, but it didn't portray anger because we just provided the information and people can have the experience that they have as they start to piece together all of these things, you know? And so I think that we didn't want it to feel like super heavy-handed in that way. And so we found people that could do that. And then the last thing that I'll just say in terms of piecing all that information together, it was really important for us to include the experts who are at top universities across the country. Because I think people need to understand that this is not just something that a small group of people is making up. It's not just scientists in basements. Like, it is people at top universities who have started to look into this, who are really understanding that this is a problem. And I think that you know, whether you need the academic elite to add validity to something, you know, is like that could be problematic, but it's also important. And so pulling those big names was important. Columbia, Tulane, Johns Hopkins, Northeastern, Duke, you know, these are all people that are featured in the film. And I think it makes an argument that's a lot more bulletproof.
Yes. And I think you did, both of you guys did such a great job of keeping it balanced. You know what I mean? We've got the family perspective, the science, the medical perspective, the financial perspective, and yet still so controversial. You know, you've got all the bases covered and such controversy. And the one, I mean, I don't want to give the movie away because everybody has to watch this documentary, but the big thing for me was when Julia's father, what was his name?
Enrico
received a call from the CDC because they got so much. Nobody's helping them. No one is helping this poor family. You know, they start getting media coverage based on a baseball game or being present at some event. They get so much coverage that somebody at the CDC called them to make sure they knew that it could be something else. And it just blew me away. And for you guys to have that recording, and I mean, it just blew, and this is why it's controversial. Cause why is the CDC calling you?
Yeah. And what other illness do you get a call from the CDC because you're raising awareness?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. It's a hard situation.
Yeah. I mean, I just love how you have all these different perspectives. And I know how it's impacted me. But share with us, has it surprised you, like the response, has some of the response from the community or outside of the community, how has it surprised you in the film?
The good news is that I think the reactions that we wanted to elicit, it's happening. And that's kind of mind blowing. So I think that's the biggest surprise is just the fact that people are watching the film and that it's finished and it's out into the world and people are having the reaction that we were hoping that they would have. So on the patient side, it's been really amazing to see that, you know, I'll just share a quick story. At our film festival premiere about a year ago at Hot Docs International Film Festival in Toronto, our very first Q&A, we just screened the film for the first time, super vulnerable experience. Also, we had been in quarantine for like almost two years at that point. Like, we were just suddenly thrust out into the world, which was scary enough. But then with this film, we're like, how are people going to receive this? And so we're on the stage with our team, and Julia and her father, Enrico, are there. And first hand goes up during the Q&A. And
who's it for? Who's the question for?
What is she going to say? And it was a woman, and she was silent for a couple moments, and then she just started sobbing. And
wow.
She said, "This is the first time in 20 years that I've heard that I've seen my story told." And I think she just said, "Thank you." Is that what she said? And then that was it. And then after the screening in the lobby, her parents came up to me, and they were also in tears, and they said, "Thank you. This is the first time that we've believed her." Wow. After watching the film.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
That was really, that was sobering, because it was like, okay, wait a minute. We have all these huge goals. You know, we want to take the film to Congress. We are taking the film to medical schools already. That's happening.
Wow.
And we can talk about that later on, but you know, we have all these big lofty goals. We want to get legislation passed, and we want more funding for research. But that impact, if we only made just that impact, and we've heard so many stories since of families who are watching the film together, who may have been separated by Lyme, who are suddenly asking for forgiveness and apologizing for not showing up sooner and for not believing in their loved ones. And that is incredible. That is just, even if it were just that, then all of this would have been worth it. So that's really amazing to see. And then I think the other surprising thing is that some people who are skeptical are coming around, and they're actually acknowledging it. And we had a review in Variety.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, this critic was a skeptic, and he acknowledges that in the review. He wrote a takedown of Under Our Skin in 2008. And he basically was like, well, I mean, as he saw in the film, there's new science now. Since 2008, there's been a lot of new science that we show. And now he's like, I made the statement that chronic Lyme disease didn't exist back then, and I wouldn't make the same statement today.
That's incredible. So
that's really encouraging. And I just really hope that people in the Lyme community can keep an open mind. I think there's a lot of anger of not being believed sooner. It's like, hey, we need to just, even doctors, even skeptics, we need to be open and try to keep the conversations open and keep the door open. And the film is doing that. And so I hope that people can use the film to have those conversations and just try to give people the benefit of the doubt and be open to them and allowing them to acknowledge that they may have been wrong.
So many people ask me today, what is the protocol for your kids now that they have recovered? And our biggest staple is Vital Plan herbs. I even use them for my treatment. It's the only thing I use to treat my Lyme, and I feel amazing. I am so grateful for Dr. Rawls and his brand, because Vital Plan herbs are clean, clean, clean. Because of this, my kids never experienced herxing. Low and slow is the name of the game here, and I successfully pulled my daughter off of antibiotics through the use of Vital Plan herbs. The herbs that we are on are in today's show notes, and you can also use my promo code for 15% off. It's simply VeryHappy15. That promo code again is VeryHappy15. This is a film for everyone. It's not a film for just the Lyme community. It's not a film just for chronic illness. It's a film for humankind, right? Like, everybody needs to see this film. And yeah, no, that, and what you were saying kind of had me tear up too, Lindsay, because, you know, so many Lyme families, as you guys know, you kind of just have to hunker down, detach a little bit and just heal as a family, especially if you have kids. And uncles and aunts and grandparents want to help. And they're just like, well, I can babysit. And I'm like, well, you can't because, you know, little Johnny's psychotic right now and, you know, can't wear clothes because everything's flaring him out. You know, it's just, it's such a different world that you try to protect. I mean, in our home, like I needed to protect my children from judgment, you know? And so you're in a, like a cocoon, and a lot of families are like that. And so I could see relatives and family friends being like, I didn't know it was that bad. Well, it's no wonder we didn't see them for 3 years.
Yeah. I think that ultimately we wanted to make a film, and by making a film, we thought that we had a better chance of reaching people. And by making a film, I mean, making something that wasn't just sort of a didactic sit down, here's all the facts. Like, we wanted to make something that made people feel things. And I think that part of the stigma of being a Lyme patient is that you become an outsider to all of these traditional human experiences that we are all having, you know? And so you get sort of feel like you're cast outside of this bubble because no one understands you. But there's actually all of these universal things that is going on in a Lyme family, in a Lyme film, that is going on in everyone else's life as well, you know? And so I think of our film as like a love story, you know? There's love between a father and a daughter, and his, you know, willingness to do anything that it takes to get her better. You know, that's a human experience that people can relate to. There's the love between Neil and his family, and Neil and his new heart, and Neil and the patients that he's trying to help, and his science. And he is this model, I think, for how you be open. And so I think that we were trying to show people that the Lyme experience actually isn't as far away from all of these other experiences that we all talk about, that it is something that we can see and grasp, and like, and it's something that all of us can relate to in some sort of way. Because we've all had moments of fear and shame and whatever it may be, and disease, you know, and ultimately this is a disease. It is our health failing us. And anyone who's ever had any health scare ever can recognize how scary and how dark that can be. And then to throw on top of that, imagine that in your scariest, darkest time, you have someone say, I don't believe you, you know? And so that was really important to us, was to make something that actually is a story that follows characters for years, and that allows you to step into their lives and to understand how hard it is to not only be sick, but to also be dismissed, but to connect to that story through these different elements that are universal that we all experience.
I totally see that. It's so relatable. You're right. This is why I said it was a film for humankind. But it is so relatable completely, of just having all this adversity and it feeling like so small that it's too overwhelming. This is too overwhelming to handle. People can all relate to that.
But I also think it's a model of like of how to show up too, you know? And I think that's one of my favorite parts of the film. It's like, yes, it's sad and it's very intense, and I know it's triggering to Lyme patients because it takes you through the whole experience of being sick. But it also is very much, I think, and we've heard this from so many people, is they're inspired, or they're looking in at themselves after looking at Enrico take care of his daughter, and they're being like, oh, wow, maybe I could have shown up in a better way. Maybe there's a different way for me to have handled this type of situation. And so I think also in that, and then Neil as a scientist and a doctor, I think a lot of doctors and scientists are seeing the way in which he let compassion guide the scientific questions that he was asking. That was his first input. And I think for a lot of scientists, they think it's all just cut and dry and it's all just data. And Neil was like, no, of course, your question has to be, how do we help people? And then from there, how do you figure out the data? You know? And so I think both Julia, her grace with the way in which she handles this, the way in which she still smiles, the way in which she still does her art, the way in which she's not just a Lyme patient. It's a part of her, but it's not all of her. I think all of them model how it is that you get through hard times. And so I think people are also really connecting with that.
Oh my gosh, 100%. The perseverance of Julia is just remarkable, especially for such a young, I mean, was she a teenager at the time? A young adult. So there's this one scene where her father is telling her, based on these brain scans, you know, this is what it should look like. And this is what it looks like in your brain. And these are dark areas. So, you know, your brain is being impacted. And she starts crying. And she's like, I'm not crazy. I'm not making this up. And she got the validation. And she's sobbing because she has validations. Not, oh, there's dark spaces in my brain. Not, holy shit, there, you can see this on a scan. Like, that is terrifying. She's like, I'm not crazy. I like lost it, because here's this child. She just wants to be seen and heard by the medical community. And she's not even like, it's not even like the freak out above like these black spaces in your brain. So, I mean, it's just, she's just remarkable. And there's so many other like Lyme warriors and other people that don't even have Lyme that are in those shoes, you know, where you just rise up to through perseverance and just, I don't even know where it comes from, you know?
Yeah. I think in Julia's case, she would say that a lot of her perseverance comes from her family. And we've absolutely witnessed that. I mean, they're a blast, you know, they've gone through really hard times, but look at Winslet, look at us like laughing right now. We have had such good times with that family, and it's a shame. We'll have to do like a blooper reel at some point.
Yes. Make some reels or something.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it was tough that none of that made it into the film. It just wasn't really appropriate. And honestly, again, I think it's really unfortunate, but some people who are skeptics would say, oh, look, they're having a fun time. She must not actually be that sick. And how twisted is that? You know, that it has to be either in misery or you're completely joyful. I mean, that's just not the reality of the human experience. Things are always going to be hard to some degree. And obviously this is really, really hard. So I'm not undermining that at all in any way. I've totally been there. But even still, no matter what you're going through, like, what do you have to lose by having a moment of laughter or joy, right? It's really healing and helpful to maintain that part of yourself. And so Julia's family, they're really good at that. But I think it's just Julia, I don't know if she gives herself enough credit, because Enrico credits Julia. He's like, oh, Julia is so amazing. She has made this whole process so much easier than it would have been otherwise, you know? So she was just like born a really remarkable human and was raised by people that shaped her into who she is. And, you know, like Winslow said, I think it's just so great that the film can beam that out into the world. You know, it's been so amazing for people to witness her journey and to imagine that, you know, if Julia can do it, so can I, right?
Yes. And these are real people, you know, they're just a real family. And so it makes it so relatable. And how is Julia now today? How is she doing?
She's in college. She just finished her first semester of college, which is so exciting. She's pre-med, which is also amazing. So, you know, it's still very much a part of her day-to-day life. But the college that she's at has made all these special accommodations for her. They've really understood what she's going through, and they want her there, and they think she's incredible. And so she has a bright future. You know, I think that she will figure it out. And I think that's one of the most special parts of the film for me is when the Sweet 16 at the end of the film, when, you know, there's this moment where earlier in, you know, years earlier, we had interviewed Enrico, and he said, you know, I want to dance with Julia. I want to see her pose with her friends for a picture, you know, all of these things that they felt that they couldn't do at the time because she was so sick. And also because the wheelchair was there. And that was such a impediment to the way in which they had led their normal lives. And in this Sweet 16, it's this moment, this community moment, and this sort of coming out where Julia emerges into this room of all of these people that have helped her before and owns the fact that she is where she is. And the family owns the fact that they can still live their lives despite the things that they're going through and despite the wheelchair. And they have their father-daughter dance, even though Julia still can't walk. And she's taking photos with her friends. And it's just this the full circle moment of like, that's where the healing lies, you know? And of course they hope to get her out of the wheelchair, and they hope to get her, you know, I think even more important than the walking, you know, there's still effects that she feels just on a day-to-day of fatigue and headaches and those types of things. And she's come a very long way on that front, but, you know, they still want to get some of that back. And they're still, of course, trying so many things. But I think it's important to have that dance of how do we both continue to fight and also accept?
Yes.
Because fighting is really exhausting, you know? So one of the early people that Lindsay and I saw at the center that we went to would always refer to it as a dance. And so she'd say, stop fighting. It's a dance. And how do you move with this thing? And so I think that's what we've seen them do. And that's what Julia does so well and with such grace. And it's no wonder that she was a dancer before she got sick. And so I think that's why she does it so well.
She does. And you guys dance as well too, because putting this together, you know, is its own dance with, you know, all the storylines that you have in the film. It's really just so beautiful. It is blowing up. It's so impactful. I see Quiet Epidemic everywhere. I really see like this is like the tip of your iceberg. What are the plans? Like, where are we going with this? Because I mean, two creative people like you two, this can't just be like, and we made, of course, it is remarkable. But I mean, like, what's on the horizon here?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, it's really funny to hear you say it's blowing up because we are just like so heads down. Like, I don't even know what's going on. I mean, I know about the community screenings and the film festivals and the in-person stuff, you know, and we just had a virtual Q&A last night for an audience of 400 people in Western New York. So like, but we couldn't see them, right?
Yeah,
so,
I was going to say, we think we did. We have no idea. We could have been talking.
And I were just talking to each other and these people were witnessing it. But yeah, I mean, it's very surreal. It's wild to hear you say that. But yeah, I mean, what's next? It's like, I think, you know, for myself, I'm definitely co-leading the film's impact campaign right now. So this is still all day, every day for me going on 8 years. We have a lot of plans. We have a community screening tour, even though the film's going to be available to stream next Tuesday on May 16th.
That's when this podcast is airing too, same day. So if you're listening, if you're listening to the podcast, it is today. And can you just tell everybody where they can watch the film today, starting today?
Yeah, so today, the film will be available on Apple TV, Prime Video, and Vimeo on demand for global audiences. So, but even still, we're moving forward with our community screening tour. People are signing up to host screenings around the world. We have requests from, I think, 13 countries at this point, because this is an opportunity to bring people together, to form community, to not feel so alone, to come together in the spirit of progress and moving forward. And again, it's like what the nurse asks, like, do you have a passion? If you have a purpose, you tend to have better outcomes. We want people to find a purpose through this film and advocating for change. And, you know, all of the Lyme support groups that are out there, rather than just like rehashing the painful stories, you know, there's a time and a place for that. But at a certain point, you just have to decide, okay, now we're focusing on moving forward. What are we going to do? Who are we going to send this film to? What letters are we going to write? What are we asking people for? You know, and we're going to help lead the charge on that, but it's really going to be on all of the people who are listening, who are watching, to really find, to reclaim their power in this situation and to be a part of the change. So, so the community screening tour is great. People can go to our website, thequietepidemic.com, take action, and then sign up to host. People can do it as individuals. They can do it as organizations. People are hosting screenings at their children's schools, at local medical groups, at universities. We have med school screenings. So if any med students are listening, we've had, you know, Julia Ruzzese's brother is a med student and he brought the film to NYU. So it's like, just start thinking, you know, and if you're not well enough to do it yourself, then nominate someone in your life who is able-bodied, who has the energy and the resources and the time, who might themselves want to make a positive impact in the world, right? So bring other people into this as well. I think we always say, you know, ticks don't discriminate, and anyone is one tick bite away from becoming a part of this growing population of people. And so I think more and more inviting healthy people who are outside of the Lyme community into this advocacy effort is going to be what really changes things. So there's that. And then, you know, we're also hoping to bring the film to Congress. So that's on deck. We're working with an incredible woman named Bonnie Abanza, who has brought impact documentaries to Congress in the past and has helped get legislation passed. You know, people are more willing to engage in the conversation if they think that they're going to get entertained. If you're like, hey, let me show you some scientific studies, they might just be like, ah, I don't want any part of that. You know, we've witnessed that. We've been in those rooms with advocates and they're doing incredible work. They really are. But it's like, we're all battling for each other's attention and time these days. And so having a documentary film to bring people in, I think it's going to happen. I think it's already happening.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's already happening. And I think you're right. We have to start sharing our story outside of the community. It's actually where you get movement. A lot of Lyme families have lost connectivity, right? And so now we got to reconnect. We got to get out there. And so I encourage everybody to like share this on your personal Facebook page, share this to your teachers, the school, like everybody at the school, all those people on the front line, the therapists. You know, my kids went through partial hospitalization programs and the therapists and psychiatrists there had no idea about Lyme disease or these tick-borne infections. And Bartonella was big in our house. And I mean, these are the people on the front lines that need to also be educated. So this is a film that everybody needs to see.
Yeah, we agree. But we're biased.
I don't need to sell you.
Like, I mean, you take it or leave it.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to share before we end?
I mean, I think following us on social media is a really simple ask that people can take part in literally right now, and it's free. We're on Instagram at The Quiet Epidemic. We are on Facebook at The Quiet Epidemic, and we have a Twitter that's just Quiet Epidemic because the made it too long. But we're starting to share content there that Winslow's been cutting. It's really cool to see that moving out to the world. And maybe, yeah, Winslow, do you want to talk about all of the 700 plus hours of footage we have that people can stay tuned for in the real?
700 hours. That didn't make it into the film.
Well, that was the whole package of 700 hours, and we, you know,
little sequel
to an hour and 40 minutes. Please do not use the S word.
We've been hearing that a lot.
Oh, okay.
We have been hearing that a lot. We have, yeah. No, I mean, there's all of this footage, and there's all these amazing people, and like we said earlier, Lyme is so complex, and we set out. Just, you know, early on, especially just being like, what's out there? Like, who do we find? And we talked to so many incredible people that weren't able to make it into the film. And so we have stories that we do want to cut and put up online and have it sort of be the behind the scenes or the deleted scenes or whatever you want to call it. And that will live on our YouTube channel and on our social media. And we'll allow people to sort of dive a little bit deeper into certain folks and their stories and also scientific concepts, et cetera. And so we'll be in the process of getting that up there and out there. And that'll all be free content to access. And it'll also point people in the direction of the film, which will be $4.99 to rent on all the places you rent movies. So it should be pretty easy to access, which is exciting. And again, I would just reiterate what Lindsay said is, you know, share this with as many people as you can. And I think that we tried to make something that people could feel comfortable sharing, that people will watch and not be like, whoa, what are you sharing with me? You know, like, I think that the people in the film are really credible and they come from really credible positions, and it's a message that we need more people to hear. And it's something that's affecting people all across the country and all across the world. And as Lindsay said, you're a tick bite away, and you're a tick bite away, but also the more you know, the less likely you are to end up in the situation where you're so very sick. And so that's why knowledge, it can be very scary, but it is so important to know and to understand and to be aware, because that will help you.
I think there might be some people too that watch it and they're like, you know what? Maybe it is time I test for Lyme too, you know, because it is everywhere. And gosh, it's such an empowering and inspiring film. Well done. I think you guys are amazing. And I just can't wait to see where you guys go with all of this. It's amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, sharing this very happy story, and for making this film is so important. It's a film for the world. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Your Thank support you so really means us. A lot. And we would be happy to do an update conversation at some point along the line. Maybe we'll have some more good news to share. Well, we have no idea where this is going, but we have very big goals. So
I love it. It's that passion. Keep that yep. passion going.
Absolutely. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening. If you felt inspired, please submit a review. More reviews help others find Very Happy Stories. And don't forget to subscribe and share this with someone else you know who could use a very happy story right about now. Until next time, have a happy day.
Said that the more time you have to invest, the greater the return. Well, guess what? Kids have the most time if we learn to invest early. That's why I created the Cash Kid Podcast, where I teach kids and some adults financial skills they need to know on how to earn, save, and invest their money. Join me on this journey as we interview experts and explore topics that allow you to grow your money as kids. This podcast will help you become the money expert among your family and friends. Just remember, anyone can be a cash kid. You just have to learn how to become one. Get ready to grow your financial knowledge and your wallet with the Cash Kid Podcast.